So welcome everybody, and today is March 22nd, and this is our regular Tuesday night class. So how is last Tuesday? Did anybody come last Tuesday?
All of us.
Oh, you are very diligent.
We did good.
Wow, great. Make me happy.
12 of us?
Oh, okay, make me happy. That's what I told my friend there. So even I go, but I have class going on.
Yeah.
My classmate, my student is still in the class. So I still give my energy to them, doing my practice.
We had discussion about our practice.
Mm. So it's going well, everybody?
Yeah.
See, it's a collective insight together.
Yeah, we did. I felt like there was so much wisdom among everybody in their sharing about their own practice that I learned a lot.
Yeah, I think that is very fruitful. If that's how we learn together. Even during the time of the Buddha, sometimes the Buddha don't give a talk, and all students gather together as a group, small group, and they discuss the teaching of the Buddha, how they practice, and if there is some misunderstanding, anything, they will help each other out. So that's one way, is to learn from each other. And Nicole?
I just want to tell you guys how much I missed because I was over at the fire station, and it was my night to provide food for the meeting, and I was just sitting over there just like, I just wanted to be here, and I couldn't get away. So, I really missed you all.
So that's just one way of supporting each other, and learn from each other, and that's way we can see what we learn. And because sometimes I'm here, and then some of you might be afraid to share, but when you are together like that, so for example, like when parents away, children at home, they either do all kind of crazy stuff, or they can be together, you know, and learn from each other.
We had a slumber party.
And I have 1 week's practice at the Kim Sun monasteries. Actually, from Monday night to Saturday, to Saturday afternoon, and we practice 3 times a day. Do a lot of beginner nude prostrations, and a lot of chanting, and a lot of meditations. You have only one talk, just only one talk from the teacher on a Saturday. And the rest is mostly focused on the practice and meditations. So we do a lot of meditations, and then sutra reading, chanting, and then prostrations. A lot of prostrations.
Good news.
But it was nice to be with. This time it's not the original abbot, he's in Alabama, he has another center. So they are simultaneously have to retreat 1 month, but have 2 centers. So one master who came from Vietnam, I knew him just quite a couple of years back. And this time he gave a talk on the 7 factors of leading to enlightenment. It's a beautiful talk, and then we're going to learn that later. 7 factors leading to enlightenment. And then on Saturday, and then I went to a funeral. There is a senior monk who in the order of passing away. And we have funeral on Saturday and Sunday. And about 100 monastics come. And we see his life impermanence there, you know. Yeah. He's 79 years old, and he have a liver cancer, and the doctor say that if he do a surgery, he might live for 1 more year. And he say no, I just want to be dying naturally. And he asked the doctor to go back to the temple and die at the temple. And he's very aware of his dying every moment and every second. I heard the story that he just about a couple hours before he died, and he said that because he said took me to this temple, the temple that he originally stayed, but they don't have a lot of monks, so they bring him to another temple that there's a lot of monastics, so they can take care of him. So before he, a couple of hours he died, he said that, bring me back to that temple, to my temple, and he get all his money. He have some money, he said, I have some money. He had all the money, he put in the bag. His bag for a couple hundred dollars and one bag, 9,000. He give to every monk. Whoever lucky, he said, whoever lucky, he get 9,000. So he can build a temple. Yeah. And the others, and he spent all his money to all the monastics, each one a few hundred dollars. And he say, that's what I have, so I give them all before I go. Just before a few hours before he left. Mm-hmm. And then they bring him back to the temple, and then there's one lay friend come in and give him some advice, and they say, my breath is very suffocating, so I couldn't talk much. And he received a little bit of donation, and he gave it to the other monk. And a couple minutes later, I look around. And the other monk who's his brother, was there, and thought that he was needing something. And then he looked up and he just go. Mm-hmm. Peaceful. But you know, like then cancer, he's without any treatment, without any morphine. Mm. He dies very peacefully. So that's just the result of practice. You know, like, even though he can get a treatment and live maybe a year or more, they say that if he can get a surgery, he can might be 6 months, 2 years, but he say that, I'm good enough. So I should go. So he left. So I was not there, and then I heard the story from the monks who was there directly. So I just come back an hour ago, half an hour before you came. Just half an hour. I didn't have my lunch or anything. I just go back and eat some oat milk before you came. Have a few, little bit of oatmeal before you came, but I still have a lot of energy. And I also visit my master temple in Ventura. Mm-hmm. Last night. Mm-hmm. So we drove all the way up from Santa Ana up, and I was 6, 7, 8 hours to San Jose last night. So I was in San Jose 10 o'clock last night, mm-hmm. and get up 4 o'clock this morning. So this was a long day for me, but I'm glad to be back here and be with you guys. So I'm glad that you have come together and practice together while I'm gone. That's what is my purpose. As I have told you many times, that while I'm here, I share with you what I know and what I practice. And one day I have to go like that monk. And we all go. We all have to go. But we don't know when. Death is certainty, but the time of death is uncertainty. We can be die. We can go young. We can go old. But how we live this world, it depends to us, up to us, to make our choice. And so I'm here with you to share with you whatever I know. And you have to walk on your feet. That's why all my words always for you is you have to work for yourself. And all I hear is just encourage you to be diligent on your practice. to give you some encouragement words and some more lessons. But at the same time, I have to do that for myself also. So nobody can do it for me either. And, but we can work together as a group. And, that's the only way we can help each other, you know, in a beautiful way, and work together in assembly. So we can come together in an assembly with the spirit of the practice. And that is how many bodhisattva and how many great beings come together, because they have the same energy. But they all have to work for themselves, but they all can encourage each other to work. And I think we come together is for that purpose here also. So did you remember what we learned before I left? Force wheels?
Yeah.
Crack wheel and force wheels?
That was the last thing. We were just starting on false wheels.
We are still on the study on the
six classes.
And we finished that, right? The six classes. So can you name it? Six classes?
Attachment, anger, ignorance, pride, doubt, and false view.
False views or doubt? Doubt. The six kind of classes that what we and that is under the subtopic of what we learned last before that. We are on study on the path of
meditation.
The path of meditation, and the six classes is on under that subtopics of the path of meditations, because we all try to go deeper on the path of meditations, and that's what we try to meditate on. That's the objects of meditation, the klesa, the six kind of klesas. And once we're able to overcome or transform that six klesa, so what is the fruit of meditation on the six klesa? So you have to see what is the fruit that you get out of that. So what is the fruit of, or what is the antidote of attachment?
Letting go.
Letting go. Someone say letting go.
Generosity.
Generosity is the antidote of attachment or grasping. Or you can say letting go also, because you have to let go. In order to really practice generosity, then you have to let go. And what is the fruit of anger, or the antidote of anger?
Equanimity.
Is
that right?
That's what I'm asking you.
No.
So first we have to write the six classes, you can see, so you can see really see what is the antidote for that. First one is attachment, and antidote to that. So what is the second one? So what was the...
How about loving kindness?
Same.
Meta.
So you can say loving kindness. Oh. You can say compassion. So what is the third one? Stupidity.
I like that one.
So... ignorance. What is the general term for ignorance? Stupid.
Not knowing.
Not knowing. You can call it illusion.
Stupidity actually doesn't mean ignorance. Ignorance is just not knowing.
Not knowing, yeah.
Stupid is actually a derogatory term mm-hmm. that could imply one's lack of intelligence.
Lack of intelligence.
But in that case, mm-hmm. people are very intelligent, but mm-hmm. they can be ignorant of a subject. Or
yes. Mm-hmm.
Stupidity may actually not be more, may not be actually.
Maybe actually. Yeah, it's kind of side view, right? So
side
we just.
View, not knowing.
Not knowing, so just take. Sorry.
Just in case.
Just in case. Not knowing or delusions. So what is the fourth one? This is the test for every one of you.
Pride.
Huh?
Pride.
So what is the antidote for pride? Solelessness, or you can say it's non-self. What is the fifth one?
Envy.
Hmm?
Doubt.
What is that?
It's envy.
Doubt.
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 So what is, then what is antidote for doubt?
Within yourself.
Meditation.
Meditation?
Faith.
Faith? Mm-hmm. So, faith. Confidence. Dharma?
Teaching.
Yeah. So teaching you can put into parentheses. Dharma. So when it's doubt here, you can doubt about the Dharma, you know, doubt about the teachings, you know, the teaching, doubt about the teaching. So the teaching is not an antidote for that, but you can doubt about that, about teachings. So I want to make this faith. So faith or confidence, you have to put in parentheses with wisdom. It's always go that you can have blind faith, right? So you have to have wisdom go along with faith. That's what, oh, we can have light go with faith. Clarity. It's going to have clarity. So what is the sixth one? You have false view, or you can harsh view. In Vietnamese we call akin. Akin. Over here we call ta kiến. Or you can have cruel view. Crucial, you know, like very cruel. Mm-hmm. Is that L here?
Yes.
Yeah, cruel views. So this is what we, in our meditation, is what we should work on all of this here. Because sometimes you meditate, but you don't really know what you meditate on. Not just only after a while you calm your breathing already, you work on your breathing already. So you know what are you contemplating. Work on. And during my retreats, what I'm working on is aversion and attachment and aversions. Because we mostly, very much easy to get trapped into that attachment or aversion. It's very vernacular. It's very in our everyday life. So just look around, you see one thing that you like and you think it's something that you don't dislike in the moment right away. So that is what I meditate on most of the time when I was at the retreat, attachment and aversions. Even you attach to the Dharma, it's still an attachment. Ultimately, you have to let the Dharma go. When you practice after you reach to the stage that even the most beautiful things you have to let go, even though you still have a very subtle glimpse of attachment, you still get stuck. You're still on the side of attachment, even the Dharma. I want to try to just remember a saying in the sutra. Pháp còn ưng xạ, huống hà phi pháp. In the Dharma, they say, Pháp còn ưng xạ, huống hà phi pháp. Có nghĩa là cái pháp á, mà vẫn còn bỏ. So that means the truth, we still let it go. The truth, we still have to let it go. Huống hà phi pháp là cái huống gì là những cái phi pháp. Even though, so you have, even the false view, you already let it go. But even the ultimate truth, you have to let it go too. So in that, at that moment, your mind is really in clarity, at peace. You don't have to say this is right or this is wrong. You don't have to label what is right or wrong. But we know in clarity. So when you meditate to that stage, you know. Because if you say that it's something that I like, something that and it's still disturbing you, still disturbing your mind. You look at the surface of the water, doesn't matter what kind of rock or what kind of thing you throw out to the, even gold, you throw out the rock to the surface of the water surface water still disturbed. Even gold, jewel, or something very very precious, you throw on the surface of the water still disturbed. So you have to let the water be itself. It's like that. So if anybody have any not unclear about this, this one?
Yeah.
Heart's will.
I mean, but what's the antidote?
This is still the same. Heart's will. This one? Oh, again. Mm. Then you know that. You know that.
He was just thinking of the rest of us. I don't know it.
You know, if it's small, then something is on the other side. That's what we've been studying. That's what we've been studying about right view, right? False view, then you have the right view. And then out of certain, you have to let the right view go also.
You're wrong.
No, right, wrong. You just know it. Just know it. But you still don't attach it. This is right. You don't attach it. You don't grasp to that. Then you still disturb. Your mind still being disturbed by that thought. That is right. So that's what I've been working on, the attachment and aversions. And look around every day that how we've been controlled by right and wrong. Every day. Either is you right or you wrong. In our everyday life. And we just in that samsara circle. Right or wrong, right or wrong all the time. So our mind is being constant disturbed. Whether it's right or wrong, it's right, you still disturbed. Wrong, you more disturbed. You're more in emotions.
The image that comes to my mind is that in the moment we have to be open to whatever that moment needs, and that if I cling to something or if I attach to something in this moment, it's kind of like an anchor that sort of pulls me back there. And then I can't be free in the present moment to see what that moment calls for. And I probably have like 80 million
anchors. Yeah. So as the beginner practice, and slowly you have to have your force view go. Slowly at the beginning, right? Force view, you have to let go at the initially. But as you move on the path, then you have to let your right view also let it go too. And that is the only two freedom is. Only two freedom is.
From what I find really hard is when someone will say to me, you know, I'll feel like, okay, I'm just kind of staying in the middle. I'm not making a judgment one way or the other. It just is. And then people, you can't think like that. You can't be like that. You have to go one way or the other, and it's like, why do I have to? Well, because you have to. And I'm trying to decide, is that my discomfort that they're trying to make me have to? Mm-hmm. Or is it that because I don't do that, they're uncomfortable? And so they're trying to force me to do what they want so they can be comfortable.
And that's what happens to everyday life. That's happened to everyday life, you have to, right?
Yeah, so I'm uncomfortable because I don't want to do that. I mean, I remember in 2006 when, in Plum Village, when Thich Nhat Hanh said, Nirvana is the absence of all views.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuck in my head, so I'm saying, well, so long as I allow myself to be pulled by all these people, I'm never going to get there. But it's really hard.
Yeah, it's really hard. So you have to know your mind at that moment. I'll tell you this story. This just happened half an hour ago. I just came and just cooked my oat milk. And I was eating my oat milk. And then family coming from other states come. They take his father and his mom come, and a couple of his brother and sister came. And they were looking around at the temple and go to the shrine. And this, I think he's around 60 or, and he asked me, what order you belong to? He asked me what order I belong to. Because in Vietnamese we have a unified Buddhist church, and there's different orders in the United States, in the Vietnamese communities. So he asked me, what order you belong to? I say that I belong to the Buddha. And he not satisfied with my answer. He said, anybody can say that, you can belong, you know. And he say, what practice you practice? I say, I practice the teaching of the Buddha. He say, and I say, everybody can say that. And he say, I know that he's upset, yeah, but I don't want to get myself in the trap. He say, if I was belong to Pumbalist order or unified Buddhist church, there's two unified Buddhist church, and he got a different perception about me, and then I got caught into that, and I know right away. And I say that if I say that I belong to this order, and he say, oh, you belong to that, and he say, what is your view about this order and this order? And I say, I don't belong to any view. I don't belong to any view. I just practice. And he seemed not happy, but it's him. Why don't I get myself in that trap? You come to the temple is the practice teaching of the Buddha. All this order is sometimes it's create and sometimes it's make us miscommunication with each other. And it's happening in the Vietnamese community. And I don't want to get myself in that trap. So you have to be very sharp when we will ask you. They try to get you in that trap and they try to pull you on their side. They say, if I belong to this order, and he say, oh, this order is like this, order like that. And I got trapped into that right away. And this is false views. And I know he's not happy when I'm answering that. I know it, I feel it, but I will not go in that that path. If I say that I belong to the order that he practiced, he'll be happy. Right? But here, this is what is here. Right. Try to make his ego bigger. And if I was to fall in his view, I also ego too. Taking side. So you have to be, your mind have to be in a constant awareness and know what is happening around you. Otherwise you get caught in people's trap. And then you get pulled everywhere. That's how what happened to us. We got pulled by attachment, by like and dislike. Every moment, if someone says something that fulfill your ego, then you got pulled by this ego. We are very easy to fall in this trap and this trap. Yeah. Either false views, can be right view too. And this is because of, behind that is the ego, our ego. Try to satisfy that ego. Try to satisfy grasping of the ego. So as a meditator or as a spiritual practice, you have to be in a constant awareness so that you don't get yourself pulling around by all this external environment, external condition. If someone says something that we like, and we try to get that pride bigger, and try to escalate that. We try to put fire or gas into that and make it bigger. But someone, the same is in the opposite, is if someone was to say something that target our ego, then we be either harsh view, silently or publicly. Right? If you have power, then you can say it publicly, you can say it out. But if you are powerless, you don't have the power, then you have inside yourself, it's a strong resistance in you. And that's why we lost our freedom. When we have that resistance, either of the false views or powerless, we have resistance ourselves. It's constantly moving in us. especially when you're in public or when you in a group. And we got fall into that. And this is what I mostly aware when I go into public or go into the big group or someone that I know and someone have power. Either we go with that power, what that people say, and we lost ourselves into that. And we try to pry our ego, either that or the opposite. And we got pulled around, you know, day by day, month by month, year by year, like that. So we got lost our own self, our own center. So the practice is meditate, is that's what we meditate on all this here. Each day we have more clarity and more convictions about all of this. And then we become stronger. Wherever you walk, you have freedom wherever you go. Wherever you go, you have freedom within you. Within you. It's very important. So you have to know that quality, that kind of strength in you day by day. And you, when you have that, wherever you go, you are there. You are there. Especially when we get around with our friends, we easily get lost. Our family. We get lost into the conversations. Either we get pulled back into the habit energies of our family, you know. Or either we resist. If we don't pull into that turbulent water, then we resist either that. Either we get pulled into that turbulent water, or we stand outside and we resist inside us. If we don't like, we got aversions. So that's what the whole way I was working on this, on the aversion and attachment. And this is how it's going on in our life every day, every day. We all have experience about this, but sometimes we don't really look deeply inside to open this knot in us. So we, so everybody clear about this here? If you don't, if you are confused, just ask. So this will help everybody too. Your confusion maybe help a lot of people too. Okay. Mm-hmm. Melody?
When I find myself, like when someone does something really terrible in my eyes, like killing a child or raping someone, it's really difficult for me not to make a judgment against that person.
Yes.
So, what would you like when I'm meditating? What would you recommend me? Like what would be helpful for me? Well, first of all, I mean, do you identify the person as neutral or the action, or how do you learn not to make a judgment on really harsh things like that?
I think that's really good questions for everybody, because we have a lot of something is something that we don't like, and judgment really pop up right away in our living room, you know, unconscious judgment. So at that moment, it's really hard for you to not to judge, but you have to. I think the best practice is practice of love and kindness. But before that, you have to understand. Because you know that person, if that person done some actions, unwholesome actions like that, that means he himself have not known himself already. You see? Not known himself, that's why he commit that kind of act. That's the first thing. If he know himself, or if you know the consequence of what he or she is doing, then he's not going to commit that kind of commitment, either murder or rapes or something like that. But sometimes you know, but you know in by intellectually, not knowing like intuitively, right? So you have to, once you know that, and you can give rise to compassion, right? But it's hard, it's not easy practice though, because you see something that happened very outrageous in front of you. It's really hard unless you are very strong in the practice. Then you say, oh, that's poorly, that person, he hurt himself. When he's doing that, he's hurting himself. First thing is he or she is hurting himself, and the second thing is the person in front of him, right? But because he don't know or she don't know that he or she is hurting himself, right? That's why he commit that kind of act.
So after you come to that place,
mm-hmm.
how do you? I mean, it seems to me that even if you're at that place, you can't just stand there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let them harm another person.
Yes, correct. You can't because you have to. You have to do something to stop him from hurting himself. The first thing, right? You have to do something to stop that person, commit that act. So in our society, we have law, we have government, we have different agencies to help out. So we have to call, make the right decisions. So we say, if someone will slap you on the face, you say, if you will practice compassion, you say, please slap me on the other hand, on the other face. For me, it's not. You have to hold that person's hand and say, stop. Right? You have to. Don't, for me, if someone, I don't practice that kind of love and kindness. If someone's to hurt me and let that abuse me, no, I have to stop him. First thing is to stop him from hurting himself before he hurt me. Right? Yeah. That's his wisdom.
Yeah.
That's his wisdom. So like Bodhisattva, they go into engage into society, they have to do that kind of work. You know, there's some rare dilemma situation, but they have the wisdoms to act on the wisdoms and compassions. So that they don't hurt himself, but they don't hurt others. So it's very clear, I have to say to you many times, in Buddhism we determine what is Buddha. Then the definition of Buddha is very clear. Self-benefit, and then benefit others. The yaktha, self-awakening, then awakening other. And then when the two actions complete, then yakhan vimang, the completeness of the circle. So self-awakening, and other. And then when these two actions complete, then the completeness of the circle, yakhan vima. So the action is complete. Benefit oneself and benefit other. So when you hold, for example, if someone has committed something that very crucial, then you hold that action because you're able to benefit yourself. Self-awakening, self-benefit. Then you benefit other. If you don't have nothing, If you don't have, then how can you give? So you have to have something here, self-awakening. That's the Buddha does the first thing when he awakens. Then he come out of his awakening and he come and teach and share the teaching. So other awakening. This is so, it's very important. So when you see someone, as you say, is committing a very unwholesome actions, then you have to do something to stop that person. Because you know that it's hurting others and hurt him and hurting the other persons. So if you see something like that, then you have to act. So that's why as a therapist, I study therapy, so the first thing is we have to study first, right? We have to know all the theory stuff and know what agency that we should contact and think of that. Right? If something happened like that, you know where to contact so that to help. to help. Either give them, refer them, or give them information, things like that. And then when you do that, you make the right decision, but you don't act upon your hatred. That's important. You act because you want to do compassion work. Because you call the police doesn't mean that you hate that person. Right? Because you can help, you can save that person. For example, if you someone suicide, you call the police. Doesn't mean that you hate him, prevent him from taking his life. Right? So you do based on your love and kindness, not based on your hatred or your anger. You can see someone commit a very crucial act and you become very angry. Then it's not yet right. You know, you see, you act because not act on your angry. It's very important. Can you act without judgment? That's the question.
Yeah.
Can you act without judgment? That's the question. Sometimes.
That's a hard call because if I see someone's going to kill themselves,
mm-hmm.
or I think they are,
mm-hmm.
that's a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's talking about not judging the person, not the action.
Is that the difference?
Can be both. See, that's what I say. Clarity, you know. That's why it's very subtle, knowing. Mm-hmm. Can you know without judge if someone was passed by you? When you meditate, for example, that's it. And you just sit there quietly, calmly, can you know that someone passed by you without judgment? You see? There's a story, there is a monk who sits and then there's an arrow. Bye. Cut right away.
No.
The arrow just shh, and he catch. Because when you have clarity, all the six senses are very sharp. All the six senses consciousness is very sharp. That's why if you have only wisdom, then you become very judgmental. When you practice, you have only developed wisdom or insight, then you become very judgmental, and you become very cruel. Even though you have wisdom, those people who are terrorists, they have some kind of wisdom, but they are very cruel. Because without this, you see, without developing, that's why all insight have always go together. If you have only this, you are very cruel. So you have to have this compassion. Some people are very intelligent, but they do very, very harmful things. Very smart, right? Very smart. But without this, it's dangerous. So that's why we always have this hold together in our practice. If a monk, they only have this, they can see you and they can know you, but can be very cruel. So you have simultaneously developable meditation, insight, and love and kindness go together. So when if you only have insight and you see someone very cruel, and you give rise to some thoughts, and that thought can be harmful thought. But if you also have some compassion in it, and you come and pat on his shoulder and try to stop him. Is that help you on a little bit on the questions? Yeah.
And your loving kindness grow up really fast when you meditate or when you see some people doing something wrong. You just think about the way they live and all the way they grow up. Mm-hmm. Because the body is amazing and her soul will make it amazing.
So inside, thank you very much, Titi, for sharing that. So inside here is understand. Because once you have understand, then your judgment become slowly deteriorate.
So say, for example, for your own self and your own practice, and you think you're becoming really wise, you think you're becoming compassionate, you're developing your loving kindness, but how do you check yourself to see if you're maybe not becoming a little delusional?
Yes, it's true. Yeah, thank you for that question. You know, sometimes we delusion about ourselves, about we become very egolessness, you know, and very compassionate. But situation around testing us. Because when you do that, and when you do that with the pride or with delusion, you can feel some kind of feeling in you is not at ease. You know you feel it. I feel it myself sometimes too. So you feel, and then that is not right already. You feel that. You pretend to be compassionate, or we pretend to be compassionate, we pretend to be egolessness. But truly in us, we feel something. We feel something. And other people feel too. So it's like, we put on a mask for ourselves, disguise our compassion, and then it's not last very long. Nicole?
So, I'm still at the place where I have all these terrible things going on inside of me, but I keep my mouth shut. And people think you're nice. And I'm just sitting there going,
yeah, you see?
No, I'm not. Silently. Nice. I think all these bad thoughts.
Silently. When you feel this in yourself, silently, you know something is going on, it's not right in you. Whether you feel disturbing or you feel not at ease in yourself. But if you do it naturally and you feel most at ease with yourself, and that is right. You see? But if you do it and we disguise it, then you don't feel at ease at all. And we have to be honest with ourselves in that. We know ourselves better than anybody. Even teacher. They have third eye, they can see, they can know you, they can feel you, but they don't say it. Sometimes I know some of you but through your speech, through your act, but I don't say it. So only I say it through my teachings, express that. It might hurt you. So I have to say it at the right time. For example, if someone say some harsh words to each other, I know it right away, but in front of people, I don't correct you. I have to wait. If you are alone, or sometimes you have tea with me, then I will say it. So it will help you. Because we all still have ego. So the ego is hurt. And I feel it too, but in front of people, I don't say you shouldn't say that. I respect you in that way. But I know when it's the right time, I can make a correction. So in that, easy for you to receive. You see? When you teach your children this letter too, if you are parents, you have to be understandable for your children, you know? Children is hurt. If you, in front of their group, their friends, if they did something wrong, but you try to say it properly in front of their friend, his or her ego is hurt, right? So you have to know as a parent, and it's the same thing as a teacher. So either you call him out, say, Nicole or Joe, can you come out here? I have something to tell you, to share with you. Say it in a loving way. And that way he can learn better. He said, oh, my mom understand me. See? So you have to know at a certain stage when to say things. Later we'll share about right speech. Speech is very hurt. It's very hurtful. I think I lost my track. So you have a question, Kat?
Basically, it was like what Paul and Nicole were saying. It's like hypocritical compassion. In other words, can you engage in skillful action without being 100% compassionate?
Yeah, you don't have to be 100. Nobody is 100%. I bet you.
So
and even Dalai Lama or Thai.
You know, like Nicole was saying, you know, I mean, if I see something I disagree with or whatever, you know, sometimes the first thing that'll be like, oh, and I'll judge it, and then I'll catch myself and run through a more understanding, you know, view of the whole thing. But it ties back into that whole thing, what you said, false view and ego.
Yeah, that's why we all, most of the time, we are in samsara. You know, it's keep repeating all this stuff. Keep coming back. Every day, you know, it's 80% what we say is keep repeating.
Yeah.
All thoughts. If you are mindful, if you are aware, I myself. And then I should say less. You say, because all this, you see, is that's why it's really secret assistance. All the thoughts that we this thought is give up, you know, is give rise to this day and tomorrow and repeat again. And it's repeating and repeat again. So when we practice, we try to recognize our thoughts and we become more silent. You save energy. Sometimes, so you speak at the right time, at the right moment, so you don't have to repeat yourself a lot. That's why some teachers, they practice silence for years. They see all of this. There is one Hindu monk, he practiced silent almost all his life. He's still at one of the center in San Jose, in the mountain, Madonna something, the center by the place that I went to. He practiced, he just only went ahead with Hindi speech, he just write a few words, his teaching. Any other questions? So when you have all of this, so remember that always insight and compassion, simultaneous go. The people who do a lot of crucial work, you know, like they have some intellectual, not really wisdom, intellectual, very highly intellectual, but they don't have this here. They're lacking of this. So the more you practice, the more you become, you have more clarity in your thoughts, in your words. So what you practice, what we, the main purpose of our meditation is become clarity, moment to moment. That's the main practice of meditations. That's why in meditation, if you sleep, you drow, you waste your time. You're supposed to be always in awareness, in clarity, because you try to develop that quality in you. While we make a mistake, because we are lacking clarity in our thoughts, in our perceptions, in our language, and then it's bring into actions. So the more you practice, the more you become clarity and calmness, calm in your speech, calm in your own thought. So you don't have to rush to speak out. See, normally we are nervous when you're nervous. That means you are lacking clarity. You have fear, we have lacking of clarity. So when you speak, your work become clumsy. What is it called? Clumsy. Because we lacking the quality of clarity and lacking the quality of calmness. And you can see Tai, when he speaks slow. And sometimes he stops. He have that kind of skill. Very sharp. He don't speak very fast so that he make a mistake. Even in grammar. You see? The quality of clarity and calmness in speech. And I know it in myself. Whenever I'm nervous, whenever I fear, then my thoughts do not become clear, not clear. And I speak very clumsy too. It's like that. So when you practice, you try to develop that the quality of clarity and calmness. And that is what helped you in the moment of your life, the last moment. And that's what happened to the monk that I, senior monk, I just have this story. He have calmness and he have clarity. That's the fruit of the practice. You don't practice to earn more money.
No.
Yes. But you practice to develop the strength of clarity and calmness. Nobody practice and say that you become rich in the quality on your own character, like you rich in compassion, you rich in insight. That's what you reach on, but you don't reach on material. But the more rich you reach in compassion, letting go, and that is the elements to make you freedom. Money not make you freedom, right? You think that you have more money, you have freedom. It's more tie you down. You buy more clothes, and the more clothes you have, you don't know what to wear. You don't know, you know, the more suit you have, the more confused you are. Right? Because you don't know which one to pick. Right? And the more busy you are. Say you have money, and then we have money, and we have to go to shop. We have to think about what kind of things we have to buy, and then we have to develop more worry, you know, like things like that. See, you tie yourself more. You think that Bill Gates is freedom? No. The richest man in the country. But the only freedom, true freedom you have is through your practice. When you have, you reach in awareness. You reach in mindfulness. That's the quality make you more freedom. And that's the quality make you think that you have more money, you become peace? I don't think so. You can have a rich material life to live, but it doesn't mean that you become ease in yourself. You can stay at a very luxury house, but you just walk around. You don't know what to do. You have a big TV, you know what, you have a lot of more channels, and you don't know which channel to pick. Yeah, it's true. You look deeply, you can see that. This is the only way is we, through our practice of meditations. So, but we have to know what we meditate on, what are we working on, because meditation is very vast, it's very generic word. So all the the six klesha that we study, and the six antidotes that we, the fruits of the practice of six klesha, that is your fruit, fruit of generosity. The more you let go, the more you become open your heart. And generosity here doesn't mean that you have a lot of stuff to be generosity. No. You can do generosity many ways. You know, give a good thought. Can be a generosity. Yeah. If you were to have a lot of money and you always have a big ego and have a big pride and always have a, you know, look down on other, you can give a lot, but it doesn't mean anything. And there's a story, you know, the story of the king and the Bodhidharma. His name is Wan Ming, during the Ming dynasties in China, and he's a king. He built a lot of temple, big huge temple in China, and he give a lot of money to the temple and sponsor a lot of monks for study. And then the Bodhidharma come from India and ask, I do this a lot of work. Do you think I have marriage? Who did? And Bodhidharma said, you have nothing. Have nothing. Quat nhiên vô thánh? You have nothing. Because Bodhidharma know through his mind, because he do this because of his ego. So he said, you have nothing. No marriage, no good deed. And then he asked, and then the king asked another question. Say, who is stand in front of me? Who is stand in front of me? Then I said, nobody. He said, you come from India and I'm the king here, and who are standing in front of me? Me and you, and who are you? I have the more power. And I said, nobody. He said, nobody. Nobody stand in front of you. Because he do because of his he tried to get some fame, some praise, some to praise his ego. And the Bodhidharma know that it's not the right time to spread the Dharma, and he go to the temple and sit for 9 years and wait for the right person to come. And then there's another monk come and ask him for the Dharma, and he stand in snow for many days to ask for the Dharma. And he turned around and say, what are you doing there? What are you want? He say, I would like to have to learn the Dharma. They say, the Dharma is not that easy to learn. They try to challenge his pride, his self and his ego. But the story going on, and I don't know that this is two part or not, but in the story say that, and that monk chop off his hand and say, this is my hand for asking for the Dharma. Chop his one of his hand. But I don't know that's that part in the story, but I don't know whether that's true or not. I don't know whether he got a knife from, you know, where's the knife to chop off his, or the sword to chop off his, one of his hand, and hand to the Bodhidharma and say, this is what I come for the Dharma. Say, okay, good. And sometimes the Dharma is easy to learn, then we are very, we can easy to forget. Right? Something is easy to get, to attain, and easy to forget. But if something is hit you, then it's in you forever. But it depends on the time, you know, the place. So you have to know when is the right time. Okay, just I want to share you just one more thing before we stop. So after we, you work and meditate on the five or the six klesha, this is what the fruit that you get. They call, in the Bodhisattva state, they call second bhumi or second stage of attaining second stage or second bhumi. Second bhumi of the fruit is called stainless, free from defilements, stainless. Vimala is Sanskrit. Vimala is a Sanskrit word. So stainless from what? From all the defilements now. This is the fruit that you get after you you purify all the six klesa, stainless. Or you get free from this defilement or afflictions. Okay?
So I have this question when I would be meditating on these things. For instance, doubt.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not feeling, I mean, I have trouble focusing on something that I don't have some kind of experience of. Like if I'm not feeling angry or something like that, I have trouble when I'm meditating thinking about anger.
Mm-hmm.
But like if I just had an anger experience, then it's pretty easy to think about. So how do you meditate on these?
In your meditation, you don't have to think about thinking. Sometimes it's disturbing. You contemplate, just look deeply, just look at that anger. Sometimes because you keep thinking is different from contemplating. You have to know that. Because if you can't, you keep thinking, the more you think, the more you become disturbed. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you get this here. Contemplating is different thinking. So in meditation, we don't encourage you to think a lot, but contemplate. Look, just for example, you say you bring up anger, just look at it. So when you look at it, you don't have to think. But the more you look, it's permeate, become deeper, it's become more clear. You know what I meant? So you have to get it clear. Not thinking, but contemplating, look. For example, I can look at this bell, but I don't have to think about this bell, right? But your anger might be not visible as this, but you can visualize that anger. You can feel that anger. So the more you think, the more become confusing. You see, the more you think, your head become more tense. You see, tense.
What I noticed, and I still do.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, Nicole, it's going to be a while. The more I know I'm thinking about it,
mm-hmm,
instead of contemplating it,
mm-hmm,
because I get tense.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm practicing. If I'm looking at anger about something, I'm practicing my anger, and I'm getting more and more angry about it,
mm-hmm,
instead of my anger settling.
Yes, because the more you're thinking, you may enforce it.
Okay.
You see, you give it more energy for the angers to grow. But here you just look. Just keep looking. Look, and then it's become clear and clear. And you get out of that trap right away. And that's how you... And now anger become... turn into... insight. So some of you might misunderstand about that. So make that clear. Not to think, but to contemplate. If you don't get it clear, just ask. The more you think, you get the more yourself tired and intense and tense in your head and your body. The more you contemplate, the more you become very deep and relaxed. Because you understand and you're able to let it go and you relax, at ease with yourself. You seem like you're not amped.
Can you demonstrate it for us? I mean, I don't understand how you can not think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, for example, if I was to look at this mocha, right? Can I can think about this mocha. This mocha have many kind of words, things that are around its color, blue, white, and that. But I was just to look at it. And the more I look at it, the more this pen become very clear to me. And all of this, the element that compose this pen, has become clear to me. And once all of this element become clear to me, and then I easy to let go, and I can see the impermanent in this pen, but I don't have to think about it. Can you look at this without thinking, right? Look at it without thinking.
Maybe judging
and thinking. Yeah, judging or thinking about that.
Put putting words.
Yeah, putting word label into
without
it.
Without words.
Yeah, without any, just look. Just look at that. Without words, without anything is going in your mind. And you just keep look, and it becomes very visual. Becomes very clear to you. This meditation is like that. Many of us think that when you contemplate, you have to think. This is about confusions. So you have to make that very clear when you meditate. So, for example, if you was to anger and you keep thinking about that anger, and that anger is go back, come back, and just bother you and make you become more irritated, and your mind become agitated about that. You cannot be at ease with that kind of energy in you. You cannot be at ease. Whatever something that the sick place or whatever you. The more you think about that sick Lisa, the more it's become enforcing it. You feeding it. You feeding it as a food. You feed that. Yeah. So just clear on that. So when the more you look, the more become less dense, less the defilement be slowly. It subsides itself. And subside, and then you don't have to think about it. And one day it has to be gone. It has to be transformed. But the more you think about it, the more give rise about that. So if you practice that after you got the fruit of stainless, in your mind, you know, like the mind, your mind slowly become a very clear mirror. It's reflect everything around you. Today I was thinking to share with you about the correct view, or no, not correct view, it's about Janki, Jantuji, correct intentions. So think about we can share that. You don't have to study in here, we don't have to study everything at one time. Just something that you can practice with. Even just one sentence, you work with that. Just a few words, but it's contained the practice into it. That's important. You don't have to learn about everything about Buddhism. You just learn some essential, and once you penetrate that, then you see everything you understand about Buddhism. Just only a few essential, but you have to know how to enter that door. That door, that's important. You know how. But whatever you do, whatever you learn, you have to put into practice. That is the core, the gist of everything. And then you have to taste that. You cook it and you eat. That's the only means you can transform any habit you have. But if you just learn, you collect more intellectual, then you become more defilement. Or become more irritation, because you learn more, but you don't practice. Your ego become very huge. Your ego is growing because you don't digest the teaching. The important is to digest and make. How do you digest that and making that so that you can nourish your body, your mind? It's very important. And when you do that, everything you say. It's become a teaching. Yeah, it's very important. So anybody have any other questions? I mean, you are quite enlightened.
We want to give ourselves
away. Now, especially our ego, very afraid of hurting.
Yeah.
Sitting here, even including myself, we all have ego. And that kind of ego is very afraid of, very fear of hurting. So we have to be skillfully practice and help each other to slowly day by day to some way that in through our practice, through our way of communication, slowly we identify that and lessen day by day. How about that? We don't not to. We know that everybody should be egoless, but that's the ultimate. But now we are in the very conventional, mm-hmm. so we have to. We live in a conventional world, so we have to use conventional skillful means to work with it, deal with it. But when we are able to work perfectly with a conventional, then we can reach that. So, you know, it's all just like two cones of the same face, you know, like the tail and head. But how the tail and head? That's how the teaching of the Buddha. Anybody have any questions? Joseph, you have any question? No? You seem like self-content?
No loud questions.
No loud questions, but silent questions. Yeah. Silent question yourself. So so I will conclude here. So thank you for your... So today I just go over with what we learned and review it and just input a little bit more on the practice and make some clarifications on your questions. So your question help to clarify, help me to clarify more. And I think it will help everybody also. And please keep practicing and work for yourself. So we'll stop here. So Joseph, did you have, you print out the word that last time you chant? Not yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Anyway, want to see if it manifests. So we will stop here. And once again, thank you, everybody. And I will invite Thuy Sathabel. We can stop here. So please collect your body and your mind, and then just be at ease with yourself.